got to be joking!
How do you do? And hello from me, Cardew Robinson. Welcome to You've Got to Be Joking, a battle of wits. Our first protagonist has a distinctive head which indicates that his origin was the result of an affair between a hedgehog and a wire brush. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mike Burton. Our next comic's lovely wife. She went to the doctor with a bad cough. He said to her, "Do you ever get a tickle in the morning?" She said, "Yes, but we changed the milkman." Here's our other problem, Mr. Malcolm Stent. Our next comic's return to this country has coincided with a big recovery in brewery shares. Jan Harding. We've gone to the first section, which is our proverb or quotation section. And the first quotation, and they should know, is poverty is no sin.
I know all about poverty. I was brought up in poverty, unlike probably the other two panellists here today, because my dad never ever worked. And the reason he never worked was because years ago in the Depression, not the one we got now, like the last one back in the 30s, they used to say, when a kid came to leave school, they used to say, "Get yourself a trade, lad, and you'll be all right." So he took the only trade that seemed attractive to him at the time, and that was the trade of a deep-sea trawlerman. Now, anybody who lives in Birmingham and is a deep-sea trawlerman has got to be on a loser. And that's why we didn't have money. My mother never had the money for the niceties of life. Things like talcum powder when I was a baby, that was unheard of. We never. She used to, when I was a baby, she used to get me out of the bath and sit me on a bench covered in flour. Never got nappy rash, I just used to break out in Jaffa cakes.
Listen, I'll tell you what poverty is.
Ah, sin. Now the expert.
I found a £5 note one day. And my mum said, "Are you sure it was lost?" And I said, "Yeah, I seen the fella looking for it."
Talking of picking up £5 notes and things, I tell you, the thing about people with notes is, have you ever seen the new £50 note? Well, you wouldn't have done, I can see that. But the new £50 note, a fella goes into a pub the other day with a £50, a flash Harry, you know. And there's that lovely Irish barman, very polite chap behind the bar. And this fella with his friend, he said, "I'll have a pint of bitter for myself." He said, "A scotch for my friend." And he put the £50 note down. And said to the Irish fella, "And get something for yourself, lad, will you?" He went out and bought himself a suit.
You talking about finding money there, Mike. I remember when I was a little lad, we found a pound note, me and my mate, George. I had this little mate, George, who lived just next door to us, and we grew up together. And we found this pound note, and he said, "That's mine." I said, "Oh, come on, share it. I shared my sweeties with you this afternoon." He said, "Yeah, we'll share it. You can have the next one we find," he said.
I think the quickest way of making money is a little Cockney fella I saw in Petticoat Lane the other day. Guess what he was doing? He was selling digital grandfather clocks to the Americans. How can you make money? I don't know how people are so gullible, you know. Man, he was a flash Harry. He used to make his money stealing hubcaps, you know, while the cars were moving.
Mind you know, out of poverty never stopped us from being patriotic at Christmas. It was true. We always used to stand up for the Queen's speech. It was because there was no chairs outside Curry's, you know.
I know a fella who bought a digital watch.
Yeah?
And he said, what's that thing there? He said, the fella says, the date. And he went back 4 weeks later, he said, it's broke. He said, what happened? He said, it was all right till I ripped January off.
So much for poverty.
Listen.
We haven't finished your poverty yet.
It's a true story. Honestly, one day, this shark, you know, was swimming through the ocean, and he heard, oh, like that. And he looked down, there's a big squid. Great big squid on its belly, like, going, oh. And the Shaq said, what's the matter, Squid? Because it came from Liverpool. And the Squid said, I'm not very well. He said, I've ate something. David Jones's boot or something. He said, I don't think I'm going to make it home. And the Shaq said, well, do you want a lift? And the Squid said, I wouldn't mind, Shaq. He said, get on. So he got on Shaq's back. See? He's gone through the ocean like that. And all of a sudden, a great big whale came in front of it. And the whale said, I've been looking for you, Sharky. And the shark said, I'm ever sorry, whale-o. Here's the 6 quid I owe you.
Now then, we go on to the next section of our show, which is where I tell a story, and in the middle of this story, I press a bell. Like that, that's a bell. And after that, each of our comics in turn carries on with the story to the best of his ability to its end. Now, the first half story is for Malcolm Stent. And here we go. Now, this country owes a great debt to its finest inventor, Professor Andrew McDoo, who is one of our finest backroom boys. He used to be one of our front room boys, but they found out what he was getting up to on the settee. He had a very fine war record. I think it was one of Vera Lynn's. And it was he who discovered Pluto, even before Walt Disney realised he was lost. But what he really did during the war can only now be revealed.
Andrew McDoo, yes. In actual fact, Andrew McDoo isn't a Scotsman, as everybody would think. Andrew McDoo is Irish. And it's funny that, isn't it? Irish. Andrew McDoo, and this wasn't the last war, actually. This was the 1418 war, because he's quite an old character, actually. And he was in the trenches, and for months and months, the Irish Rangers had been charging across no man's land and giving the Germans some stick, and then running back. And then the Germans had been doing the same. And this one day, Andrew McDoo, who was a clever lad, he said to the captain, what's the most common German Christian name? And the captain said, Hans, I think, Hans. He said, you should be safe with Hans. He said, okay, right. And that night, he crept on his stomach all the way across no man's land. So he got to the German trenches, and he said, Hans. Hans. And a little voice suddenly said, yeah, as he popped his head up, and he went, boom, shot him. And he crawled along a bit further, and he said, Hans, Hans. And the head pops up, and he says, yeah, and he shoots him dead. The next night, the Germans, who ain't slow, had copped onto this. And this one German soldier says to his captain, Captain, what is the most common Irish name? And he said, I don't know. He said, he didn't say it like that. He said, no, I don't know. He said, Patrick, I think. So he said, okay. And he crawled the same over to the Irish Rangers trenches. And Patrick, nothing. Patrick, nothing. Patrick. And a head pops up and he says, is that you, Hans? He said, yeah.
Thank you very much, Malcolm.
I remember my dad going in the army, you know. And my mum said, the war will soon be over now. I said, why? She said, he's got a terrible temper. She had a story about the fella. He got called up and he sent him abroad in the war. And as soon as he arrived, he said, any chance of a week's leave? And he said, you've only just arrived. He said, well, any chance of a leave? And he said, oh, you have to do something brave. He said, like what? He said, go and capture a German tank. I'll give you a week's leave. So he said, all right, about 10 minutes later, he's back with this great big German tank. He said, can I have a minute? He said, where'd you get the tank? He said, I met this German. I said, do you want a week's leave, Hans? He said, yeah, so we swapped tanks.
Now, there was this fellow who was absolutely useless at sports, Mike.
Yes?
Nevertheless, and notwithstanding and moreover, he kept trying to find a sport to suit him. For example, he had a go at high diving. That really annoyed his wife. She was in the bath at the time. Then he decided to have a go at hang gliding.
Ooh, I'm glad.
On his first flight as a hang glider, he looked so scared and pathetic he was mugged by a sparrow. So he tried a nice, safe indoor sport, and the very first time he played, he managed to get a double top and a bullseye. This shook everybody because he was playing snooker. But the oddest sporting event he was involved in was...
Yes. Grouse shooting. He'd love to go grouse shooting, I think. He won a couple of bob on the horses and bought himself a couple of shotguns. And being grouse shooting, he shot everything, you see, because he had a grouse against everything. He did. He went out and shot, he shot lampposts, pillar boxes. And he looked up and he seen this fella, funny enough, in a hang glider. And he went, look at that. Bang, 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 bang. And a fella said to him, what sort of a bird was that? He said, I don't know, but I made it let go of that fella.
And now Jan Harding.
Yes, I'm listening.
Your story is about a chap who absolutely loved gardening. He could always be found in a tatty old suit, a deerstalker hat, and a dirty old pair of mud-covered Wellingtons. Now, this really annoyed his wife. She preferred him to wear pyjamas in bed. Nonetheless, he managed to grow some very pretty and amazing things. He actually crossed a potato with a cucumber and ended up with chips that wouldn't fit in the pan. But he learned from his mistakes. He found out that to rotate the crops, you don't put them in a spin dryer. So, he then went to a gardening expert.
Ah, yes, yes, darling, my dear, dear friend. Great chap. He was a pumpkin eater, actually. And he served his time in the early years, you know. He was a window box weeder when he started. And then he tried and tried and tried and finally got his own place. And he was so proud, you know. Oh, he was so proud. He loved... People used to go and look at it, you know. He rang the fire station, of all things. He said, fire station? I said, yeah. He said, now, my garden has a wide path and the flagstones, which I put in myself, I carried them down from the quarry, which is... He said, excuse me, there's a fire station. Yes, that's right, yeah. Now, the borders are little stones which I got when I was on holiday down there. He said, this is the fire station. You must get off the... He said, just wait a minute. I know it's the fire station. Now, on the side of that, some lovely flowers are just coming out now, which I planted last year, because you've got to put them... He said, you must get off this front, son, because this is the fire... He said, I know it's the fire station, and the fire is in the place next door, and I don't want you trampling all over my garden.
Now we come to our second proverb, which is very appropriate in these days of commuter problems. Travelling makes a man wiser, but less happy.
There's this fella who sees an advert in the paper. Holiday in the Bahamas, return fare, 15 quid. So he goes down to the travel agents and he says, that 15 quid holiday, Bahamas, he says, I'll have it. So the travel agent says, right, hits him, knocks him out. And when he comes to, he's chained to the oars in a galley. And they're halfway across the ocean. Don't ask me which one, because I don't know. And after about 3 days of this rowing, he turns to the fellow sitting next to him. He says, I don't think much of this. He said, I hope they fly us back. And the Irish lad sitting next to him, he says, well, they didn't last year.
There was two fellas sitting on a train. You know, you sit in the train, and the train takes off, you see, and they always talk, don't they? People always talk. And this fella said, I say, old chap, he said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to London. Where are you going? He said, I'm going to London. He said, what do you do for a living? He said, I'm a navvy, I dig holes. Dig holes and build houses. He said, what do you do? He said, I'm a solicitor, ducky. Let's play a game on the way down. He said, what do you want to play? He said, I'll ask you a question. He said, if you can't answer, you give me a pound. You ask me a question, if I can't, I'll give you a pound. He said, you know, it's too much up there for me, you are. It's all right, old chap. If I can answer your question, I'll give you £3. You still give me a pound. He said, you're on now. First question. What's got two heads, seven legs, two tails and flies? He said, oh, dear me, I don't know. Here's your £3. What has got two heads, seven legs, two tails and flies? He said, don't know. Here's your pound.
I ran out of petrol the other day, and I thought, oh, would you believe it? It's awful when you run out of petrol. And I pulled in and I waited a little while, and suddenly a very charming Irishman drove in front of me. He said, what's wrong, sir? I said, oh, I've run out of petrol. Ah, he said, follow me, I've got a tank full. But I mean, if you've got a lift in a car, I had to get a lift in a car the other day, and the car was coming along, I put my hand up, and it was a lady driving it. I thought, oh, that's fine, you know. But, now, wait a minute. She had a great big Alsatian dog in the back. Now, I don't like dogs. I said, I can't get in there. I'm sorry. I'm frightened of dogs. I can't, really. And there were six lovely children. I said, come on, mister. It won't hurt you. Look, look, look. Touch it. Come on. Come on. It won't hurt you. Come on. Come on. And it was a bit friendly. And I happened to touch it a bit. And I thought, well, I'll get there anyway. And I got in the car. And one of the kids bit me.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. So we go on to the party piece section. First one to bring his art to the party, accompanied by Ken Frith, Mr. Jan Harding.
Now, I'm very fond of pets. I like pets. Well, you know, hamsters and rabbits, things like that. But people, it gets out of hand. They don't stop at that. They go right over the top. With neighbours like you, with your pet kangaroo, and all the little things it's not supposed to do. The goat called Fred that ate my bed and trampled on the potting shed. Your boy's house-trained ape that uprooted our gate. The parrot that stuck in our flue. When people ask where I live, the only answer I can give, it's right next door to a flaming zoo.
Thank you, Jan. Thank you, Jan, and thank you very much, Ken. Brilliantly accompanied, as always. Our next artist has a head for comedy and vice versa. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Burton.
Friend of mine, true story. Friend of mine. He goes to buy a car. This is true. And he went to the guys, he said, I want to buy a car. And the fellow said, lovely car I had. So he said, £14,000. He said, oh, only got £17.50. He said, you can't buy a car for £17.50. He said, I want one. Don't you shout at me, you twit. He said, come with me. And he took him around the back, where there's a rusty old hand cart with shafts. He said, here are £17.50. He said, how's it go? He said, buy a horse. He said, oh, only got £17.50. He said, I'll tell you what, buy the handcart, take it down the road to the animal experimental station, and ask for Charlie. He'll give you something to make it go. So he drags the cart to the animal experimental station. Charlie, dear Charlie! And a fella came out of the white coat. He said, what do you want? He said, they told me at the garage, you give me something to make the cart go. He said, I've got just the thing. And he goes in, he comes out with a great big 9'18" hen. He said, that, Charlie? He said, yeah, stick it in the shaft. He goes all around Manchester. Round Oldham, Bury, back again. On the M6. And he hits the M1 and he thinks, right, I'll open it up. Get up, Ed! Whoa! 70 miles an hour down the M1, like, oh, that's the wind. And he's just coming up to Watford Gap. And a big oil tanker stopped dead in front of him. He said, whoa, Ed, whoa! Whoa! Breaks all its shackles and just vanishes out of sight. And he finishes up on the hard shoulder with his anchor out upside down, wheels going round, shafts up in the air, and there's feathers everywhere. And there's always one, isn't there?
Morning.
He said, morning, Tofferson. He said, broke down, lad? He said, yes, sir. He said, what happened? He said, my big end's gone.
I like that. Now, our final comic has to follow Mike and Jan. Here he is, Malcolm Stent.
I brought the guitar with me tonight. You don't mind, do you? I've got a song to finish off what Mike was saying about the cars and the drivers. It's a bit in it for you. It goes like this. It goes, la-da-da, la-da-dee-dee, la-da-da, da-da-da. Give it a try. La-da-da, da-da-dee-dee. Go on. La-da-da. Da. It's great, that. We only want one more. We've got a trio. This is a song about somebody you've all met. I remember the day I was driving along the Liverpool highway, singing a song, and the day was as good as the road it was long. I was on my way when up ahead a black speck appeared, and as I drew close it was just as I feared, doing 25 miles an hour in top gear in the outside lane. Oh dear me, glory be, one of those I could see. It was a red velvet steering wheel cover driver. La-da-da, la-da-dee, la-da-da, da-da-da. Now he and his wife were sat side by side in their safety belts. They were safely tied, and together they drove through the green countryside, which they did not see. They'd got two dingle dangles that hung by a string from the mirror, and on the back shelf was a thing that nodded its head up and down with a singular stare at me. Up and down, side to side, keep your eyes open wide for the red velvet steering wheel cover driver. La da da, la da dee dee, la da da, da da da. Actually, that bit's been cut. Now it's Saturday night, the night for a fling, so it's on with your glad rags, hey ding a ding, and it's down to the hall for a nice game of bingo and cups of tea. Then it's back home to bed, switch out the light,
hug the hot water bottle, sweet dreams and sleep tight, and God save us from things that go in the night, and especially all those dreams of the day when our own children will say, my dad's a red velvet steering wheel cover driver. Last one now. La da da, la da dee dee, la da da, da da da. One more for luck. La da da, la da dee dee, la da da.
Thank you very much indeed, Malcolm Stent. And so we end the party. My thanks to Mike Burton, Malcolm Stent, Jan Harding, and our pianist Ken Frith. You've Got to Be Joking is devised by Mike Craig, produced by Ron MacDonald, and controlled with savoir faire, pas de deux, and Coco Van by yours truly, Cardew Robinson.